Welcome to the free webinar series for EFL and ESL teachers by Bingo Bongo Learning. I am your host, Jeremy Lanning, and welcome to today's webinar. Today we're going to be talking about the effective use of role-playing games in the classroom. Our guest is Jay Pallarino from Tanuki Games. And if you're like me and you hear role-playing games, maybe you think, what are role-playing games? Or how would I use role-playing games in the classroom? Well, don't worry. You don't have to panic. Jay is going to explain the elements that make role-playing games a great tool for an activity in English lessons, and he's going to walk us through some different styles or types of games that we can try out. So, we're looking forward to that. But first, let me tell you about myself. I'm Jeremy Lanning. I'm the creator of Bingo Bongo Learning, and I started a step-by-step English, a conversation school here in Kagawa, Japan. I started that 10 years ago. So initially, I wasn't a big fan of games in the classroom. I had some bad experiences where the kids were very, very angry if we didn't play games. Games, games, games! And so for a couple years, we had the no games policy, no points, no competition. But this month, in the last three or four webinars, we've been really talking about what kinds of games are effective or effective ways that you can use them in the classroom and out of the classroom. And now I'm actually a bigger fan of games, especially games that have more educational potential, as well as games that are less about the competition, but more about cooperation and communication. So, let's see. I want to also mention that you can check out any of the past webinars on the Bingo Bongo website. Just type in Bingo Bongo webinar. You'll find all of our past webinars. They're all there to watch, download, or even you can download the audio only if you'd like to just listen to them. That's all free, no registration required. And this month, like I said, we've been talking about games, so you can hear our past webinar with Jeff Hodson about the best games for online and offline lessons, as well as a webinar that I presented on how to use online games with worksheets in lessons. This could be done online or offline. And today we're going to continue the conversation and talk about role-playing games in the classroom. Okay, so today's guest is Jay Pallarino. Jay is a TESOL certified Cambridge examiner, and he's currently studying for an MA in Applied Linguistics and English Language Teaching. he also has over 20 years experience teaching English, Japanese, and music in Japan and the US. Jay is an active published board game designer and developer, as well as a recipient of the Best of JALT Award. JALT is the Japan Association of Language Teaching. He has also been a keynote speaker for the JET Program Skills Development Conference on the topic of classroom gaming. Currently, Jay teaches at the Fukuoka College of Medical Health and Sports while developing effective game-based learning activities and role-playing games. That's quite a resume. So, why don't we go ahead and invite Jay to join us now? Hey, Jay, how's it going?
Hey, good evening. Thanks for having me.
Hey, man. Thank you for being here. It's a lot of our guests typically are school owners and they teach kids. But do you teach kids now, or you primarily teach university students?
I teach 2-year trade school students at the moment who are at the university age, 18, 19. But I did teach kids for about 10 years prior to this. Yes.
Right on. Yeah, I've never taught in that sort of age group. So I've got a lot of questions about how to teach lessons to them, and also how to, you know, use role playing games in that age group or maybe younger if possible. But before we jump into today's topic, can I ask a couple of personal questions? What brought you to Japan initially?
Music. Initially, I went to a music school in Philadelphia, and I found myself drawn to the traditional music of Japan, and That's the short story of it.
What instrument do you play? What instruments? Is that a question I should ask you, or is it? Do you?
I was primarily in composition, so okay. I write lengthy esoteric works that nobody likes to listen to, but me. But anyway, yeah, it's that's a story for another time, I think.
Wow. No, actually, I'm interested because I love music. I I've learned, you know, guitar, drums, and I write a lot of my own like kids songs. We have an udon song to like promote the prefecture's like, you know, famous Sanuki udon. But it's always nice to meet another. Do I say musician? If you are you're a composer, I think you're on a level like much much higher than I'm.
Well, I actually did a film that was filmed in Fukuoka just last year called the Four Goddesses, which was a really nice experience, but made by a local filmmaker and whatnot. So. Yeah, I still dabble, and I've actually been thinking about sort of making some songs for like a children's ESL album type of thing. So
wow, we'll see what happens. You did the soundtrack for a movie.
Yeah,
that is awesome. That is something that I am very, very much interested in. But I think we'll have to get our conversation back on the EFL ESL. But I know it's really it sounds like you have a really diverse background. That's super cool. So then you said you're not teaching kids now, but you're at a 2-year trade school.
Yes.
And the ages are 18 and up? What's the
18
typical?
And, 18 and up, yeah. Usually just out of high school or even sort of younger than that. There's a division of the school for sort of high school dropouts and whatnot that sort of have like troubled backgrounds and things. But mostly it's for students who've kind of left high school, who are now looking to sort of find a career and are sort of like, you know, in that in-between area, still kind of like looking for what they want to do. And
okay.
So they come to the school that I work, and they help to sort of place them in sort of places of employment and whatnot. And the English department is part of that group.
So then, what is the trade that they're currently studying? You're at the Fukuoka College of Medical Health and Sports. Is it related to that?
That is one of the schools that I work for. Yes. Yeah, so in that within that school, they place them in jobs with physical therapy, sports medicine, that sort of thing. But I also work at the Fukuoka School of Music, the Fukuoka School of Arts and Design, the Fukuoka Echo College. And so it's sort of a diverse kind of umbrella of trade schools that are under the GK group, as it's called.
Okay. And so then the English component of their curriculum, of their studies, is that a pretty big part? Obviously, if you're going into, you know, music and arts, you'd think that English is a pretty big factor in that.
It was compulsory until about 2 years ago, but now the curriculum has been changing, and I think for the better a bit. Now it's becoming more of an elective-based intensive course, and we're focusing on 4 skills, and the program is becoming much more deeper, like wider in depth and breadth,
okay,
as it were. Originally, you know, we would just teach all of the schools that would come through, and you'd have these classes of students who just really don't want to be there, and that became a bit of the challenge, but now luckily we have a lot of students who want to be there, so that's fun for us as the teachers.
Oh, right, definitely. So it's kind of the junior high school syndrome where everyone has to take it. Some kids are interested, some aren't, and as a teacher, you're more you know, struggling with getting everyone to enjoy or to participate and get something out of it. Whereas if you have only students who are selecting that course, I think you can take it a little bit further, right?
Yeah, for sure. We kind of think that the public school system up to that point has sort of failed a lot of these students. And so we're hoping to sort of like get this last chance to catch them before they just kind of give up completely and feel like, oh, you know, English is not worth my time or something like that. And, you know, to that end, some of the kind of activities and tasks that we give them in class, such as role-playing games and card games and whatnot, are a kind of effective way to help to kind of rein them back, you know, into finding that, you know, language learning is such a fun and rewarding thing, you know?
Right.
I'm sure you with Bingo Bungo find the same thing with some of the things you develop, right?
Yeah. I mean, obviously if you can capture the kids, you know, interest, or, you know, captivate them somehow with the materials, then yeah, it's going to be really, productive or effective. Obviously with a 3-year-old, it's much easier to, you know, dangle a shiny object in front of them and they're like, whoa. But okay.
Are you talking about a cat right now?
Yeah. So
same difference.
Right. So no, that's interesting. So I guess I should explain for any of the listeners or viewers who are outside of Japan, the public education system in Japan, now they start even younger. They're starting around 2nd and 3rd grade of elementary school. 5th and 6th grade of elementary school is mandatory English, and they jump into junior high school, and it's a lot of reading and writing focused curriculum. And I think students, a common complaint I hear is that, you know, I've studied for 3 years, 5 years, 8 years, I can read and write, you know, really well, but I can't speak. Do you find that your students are facing the same thing, even at that age, that level?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Some of them that still can't read or even write English at this point. Yeah. there's sort of a very strong function on the kind of grammar translation method, which has a place, but perhaps it's overly relied upon, I think.
Right.
Rather than a sort of communicative approach. Yeah, for sure.
Sure. And if you know, the Japanese, you know, teachers, the Japanese teachers of English, does that make sense? The English teachers who are Japanese, that's probably the easiest approach for them to translate. Because, you know, if they don't have confidence to speak, it just kind of continually perpetuates this system of let's translate and not speak. But okay, so yeah, but why don't we jump into today's topic a little further before we get too sidetracked? So I like to just start with a little question I ask all of our guests, and we can talk about this for, you know, 30 seconds or 30 minutes. But do you think online learning will eventually replace in-person lessons? Obviously, all of us, you know, we're faced with COVID-19. Probably, did you go online?
Huge. Yes. Yes. We've been on and offline for the past 2 years, as I'm sure you have. It's been pretty tricky.
I kind of have this image of universities staying online longer than, you know, private institutions or private schools. We were only online for 1 month, 2 months. And even recently, we haven't had the, you know, we haven't needed to go back online. But I know other, you know, schools in larger cities have. So are you a fan of the online like teaching, or I mean,
yeah. Well,
tell us what you think, Jay.
I'm a fan of everything that has to offer, right? I mean, who doesn't want to use sort of technology in the classroom and all that kind of stuff? The online learning itself, I think it has its place, right? In like call and sort of like LMS content, things like that. Will it replace in-person lessons? Gosh, I hope not.
Okay. so I kind of feel like it will kind of take over the private sector. So like an English conversation school, teaching young kids, junior high school, kind of that the extracurricular education stuff. I believe that it will be able to get a stronghold and kind of displace a lot of the current, you know, brick and mortar schools. I don't think that, you know, junior high school, high school, that'll never really get replaced. So then, you know, continuing on to universities or trade schools, you think it's going to, the classroom is going to be the preferred format for a while?
Yeah, I think so. I'd like to hope so as well. That's an interesting opinion that you have. Are you imagining it's sort of like a kind of return to this like audiolingual method where it's, you know, a bunch of students sitting in small kind of cubicles like they do now with the kind of man-to-man juku schools, like the cram schools, Japan. Yeah.
Well,
where they just kind of listen through and like watch like Zoom videos like this.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of forms it can take, but just looking at the trends of outside of Japan, a lot, like for example, with China last year, there was a huge, huge industry. It got shook up a little bit because China decided that Chinese corporations could no longer teach English using native teachers outside of China. Anyway, it's really complicated. But it just opened my eyes to how big of an industry is out there. And while I don't see that in Japan with kids yet, you do see it with adults. There's a lot of online alternatives. They're super cheap. You can just have a one-on-one conversation with a, you know, an English teacher for $5, 500 yen a session or something. Really, really cheap. So anyway,
there's certainly benefits too, like basically, but what we're doing, we're in different parts of the country talking about like-minded interests. And I mean, so we don't have to meet face-to-face for that. So that is clearly a benefit, I'm sure. But
yeah,
I guess I still like the tactile nature of being in a school with that face-to-face nature of it. Maybe I'm old-fashioned.
No, I agree. I love it. But also, like you, I've decided that, hey, there's a lot of benefits that we can take advantage of. And if I'm only... I meet my students once a week. You probably, how often do you meet your students?
This new intensive program that we have, we meet them 90 minutes, four times a week.
That's brilliant. So that, in that case, you know, that's what you need to speak, to communicate. You need exposure and you need practice. If you do the English conversation once a week, then we need to rely on the technology to get kids doing more at home.
But, yeah.
Okay. So with that, on that note of, you know, being in the classroom using physical objects, let's jump to our next question, which is, I guess, kind of pre-COVID. So when you first came to Japan, you use games as a large, you know, resource in your lessons now. Has that always been the case? And what has changed since you first started?
Right. I guess I was just naturally drawn to that, right? I think we follow sort of what our passions, where our passions lie and our personalities and whatnot,
right.
And how that sort of then bleeds out into like how we teach the classroom. And I'm sort of a bit theatrical and I find myself kind of just gravitating towards gaming. Like it's sort of changed. People say like, oh, it's a worksheet or a task or an activity, or you know, don't want to say game, right? Cause that's sort of like a negative word and, yeah. You know, in a lot of establishments and stuff like that. But I'm hoping to sort of to change that a little bit. And I think that there's a real effective use, but I mean, how has it changed? I mean, certainly the medium has changed, right? Because of COVID stuff, you're not online, but the sort of the method and the interaction and stuff like that really, I don't think has changed all that much at all. What have you found with your students?
Well, it's interesting because this month, all of our webinars are on the topic of games. And when I first started, I didn't have a lot of experience teaching young kids, but the norm was, you know, go in, teach some words, sing a song, play a game and give them some homework. And my kids became these like game monsters. They're like, game! I'm like, okay, guys, let's do this. They're like, game! And they were just like, I could not control them. I lost, you know, they're like, we're going to play baseball today. Like in the classroom, I'm like, yeah, our old teacher, we'd play baseball. Okay. And so then I realized like, all right, their mind isn't in a, you know, communication mode. And so I went on this kind of anti-game kick for a few years, decided to try that. And then finally, I've come around to realize, like you said, you can call a game whatever you want. You can call it an activity. But as long as you understand, it's not the competitive games, but it's the cooperative games. Or, you know, there's different contexts in games that will allow them to learn more in terms of communication. So yeah, I've gone back and forth. But it sounds like from the beginning, you've been using games and you're just, let's gamify this process.
In some way or another, yeah. And I think, but I do want to make a distinction because I think there are a lot of teachers, quote unquote, who do use games in class, but as a sort of a way not to teach sometimes, right? They'll just come in, they're like, oh, I got to be with these kids for so-and-so, like 30 minutes, 40 minutes, whatever it is. And here, just you guys do this for a little while. And then the teacher will go and just be on their phone in the front of the classroom. And I don't advocate for that at all.
Right.
It's sort of more of like a principled approach to using games in the classroom, like effectively. And in a way you want the students to sort of anticipate the game, but not be so like game that like, you know, you lose sort of semblance of a classroom environment and whatnot. And,
yeah.
So I think that's also quite important, but yeah, yes, but I've always been kind of trying to implement them because I find that, you know, if you're having fun, then it sort of breaks down some of the effective factors that keep people from learning in a way. What are they bringing from the outside, right?
I agree.
If you could break down those barriers, then, you know, you could get in there a little bit easier and start making real change, you know?
Yeah, I mean, this year we started, it's not a role-playing game. It's more of a collectible card game. Is that the right term? I know very little about actual game, you know, realms, but so, you know, Pokemon is a collectible card game, right?
Yes.
So we decided to create this sort of English version with these characters, and they have, you know, their birthday and their name, and just as cram as much English information as we can in it, give it to the kids, and then we don't really have a structure. We don't really use it in class as so per se, but we found that the kids are using them and they're picking up a lot more information. It's the motivating factor that we found.
Yep.
So you harnessing that and then, you know, using the games to you know, maximize your lessons in terms of English output.
You're talking about your battle eggs, right?
That's the game. And eventually, you know, it could take the turn of moving more towards, I don't know if RPG is the right term for it, but the more advanced the levels get, the more the kids want to read what's on the card and mm-hmm. ask and, you know, communicate that. And so I can see that there's a lot of potential, which is why we should turn it back to you and talk about what kinds of RPGs. So I want to ask this question.
A comment real quick, because I think you're coming at it with your battle legs thing from like almost an intrinsic level, right? So you know, the students see these cards that they want to collect and they're familiar with, like you said, the Pokemon cards. So they're almost in like a role-playing space. They want to think of themselves like Ash collecting these Pokemon. And so then they're seeing all the English that's written on the cards and that they're learning it intrinsically without the teacher saying, these are the words that you've got to learn for the test and whatnot. And so in that way, it's very similar to sort of the approach that I'm taking with role-playing games. So I think there is a role-playing element already there. So
that's a very valid point. So that would be one of the main points of today's webinar is to try to find that that intrinsic value in anything you're using that you don't have to say, okay, look at page one and do 1, 2, 3, 4. Just they want to do it naturally.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
Great. And if we can find that for, 3-year-olds or for, 30-year-olds or anybody in between, or, that's great. Yeah. So,
and then the language begins to emerge as a way to sort of overcome the hurdle or something like that. Very much similar to like task-based learning, right?
Okay, great. So I know very little about RPGs. If you say RPG, role-playing game, I think of Dungeons and Dragons. And then if you look at like video games, you hear other people say like RPG. So like Final Fantasy, is that an RPG?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So are these the kinds of games that you use in lessons, or do you have a different style game? So the question I want to ask is, what kinds of RPGs work well for lessons?
Yeah. Wow. Okay. That's a deep one, isn't it? So yeah, there's so many. Like, you've got your action RPGs, your adventure RPGs, strategy RPGs, MMO RPGs, JRPGs, TRPGs, TTRPGs. I mean, it just goes on and on.
So you just put any letters you want in front of RPG and it becomes something. Is that what you're telling me?
I don't
know what any of these mean.
Yeah. I guess. I mean, from the game aspect, you have like action RPGs, which sort of focus on combat over narrative.
Okay.
And that's a whole kind of subgenre of gaming. Then you've got like adventure RPGs, which focus on sort of narrative over combat and characterization, what have you. And then you have strategy RPGs, where it's sort of like more tactical. It's characters on a map and figurines and things like that. And the list goes on and on.
All right. Can I interrupt for a second? If I have no experience with RPGs, I don't know, is this like a 10-minute activity or a 1 hour? Is this like a year-long, like continuous activity? If I have no experience with RPGs, like how do I get started? Like, what is the easiest, entry into RPGs here?
Yeah, well, someone who's been a gamer and a role-play gamer since the 90s, that people always say that they're just intimidated because you think RPGs, a lot of people think,
Dungeons and Dragons,
Dungeons and Dragons,
complicated.
huge rule books,
right?
Yeah, like barrier to entry, and then it came with a kind of nerd mentality, maybe like Satanic Panic late 80s and stuff like that. And I mean, thankfully that's all gone, and it's sort of immersed itself now in the popular culture and stuff like that. But no,
right.
It's in fact, to the way in is so very simple. You could just start off with something like, okay, you're in a dark room, what do you do? What? I mean, that's you're already role playing.
Okay, got it. So how about this? If I ask, like, if you're going to use a role-playing game in a lesson, and is it all verbal, or do you give them any sort of prepared scripts, any sort of vocabulary that you want to practice? How would you, if you needed to have some sort of physical object in that process, do you prepare something for them?
Right. Yeah. Oh, and sorry, I didn't answer the details to your question about the length of time as well. Like, can it take 10 minutes to an hour? Yeah. I mean, it's up to the needs of the class at that moment. It can be 10 minutes. It can be the full length of a classroom if you'd like.
Okay.
I tend to do it with sort of like a pre-task activity, and then the game itself, and then sort of like a post-task, almost exit ticket kind of activity where that they can sort of then kind of combine all that knowledge that they've just learned. But yeah, so it can be varied based on the teacher. And for the record, so many teachers already do role-playing activities in the classroom, but they, unfortunately, I think the students kind of smell the boring.
The textbook.
Let's do the customer and the shopkeeper kind of thing. And they're just like, how many times have we seen this, right? Especially at the sort of the age level that I'm teaching now. But if you kind of disguise that into like, well, now you're into the shop and you've got to get the gear that you need to then go on the adventure. Well, it's still the same kind of shopkeeper and shopper kind of going in to a place to do an interaction.
Okay.
but they kind of conceptualize it differently within their mental headspace, and I think that's what sort of transforms it into a kind of really, like, they want to now find the words to express in order to get through this sort of encounter, as it were.
Okay, nice. So with Tanuki Games, you guys, I've seen you guys at you know, trade fairs or expos, but you have physical cards. So these are these considered role-playing games, or are these a different type of game?
Some of the cards that we've been selling at the expos are different types of games. We have sort of, but our fundamental kind of, our core message is to sort of make intrinsic games where language is sort of intrinsic to the sort of playing of the game.
Okay.
They require communication in order to sort of, for the game to progress. And then in that way, you know, the students feel like they're playing a game. They know that they're having fun, but now they want to use that language to sort of like express it. Our most recent product called Four Kingdoms is a role-playing game in a sense.
Okay.
It focuses on a sort of like the creation of a narrative, a group, potentially cooperative narrative that unfolds, that this time doesn't follow a deck of cards, but it uses a deck of cards, but it follows a small little booklet.
Okay.
That as they go through it kind of tells the story.
Very cool. So then, like, I think you are probably a very creative and, you know, like you said, very, you know, theatrical person. If somebody didn't have that sort of creative, you know, confidence to, like, go into a classroom and just, you know, create this scene, this role for the students to jump into, are there set, like, games that you think, you know, an entry-level user could take advantage of? Or is this just...
I wonder if somebody like that would be wanting to do that in the first place. I mean, maybe they're looking to sort of change their style and hopefully, you know, they would reach out to stuff like that. I wonder.
Well, the reason I ask is, you know, I'm also very creative and, you know, very energetic in the classroom. But if you said, hey, let's do a role playing, I wouldn't know where to start. So just having some sort of, I don't know, is there a manual? Have you seen that or created something like a, you know, an ESL, EFL guide to role-playing?
I guess. Well, that's currently, I think the research that's out there is shallow at the moment.
Okay.
Actually, that's what I'm starting to do, is trying to come up with a sort of comprehensive curriculum that's based on role-playing and whatnot. But there is a lot of stuff out there. And so at the moment, unfortunately, I can't think off the top of my head. But what I would use as a way in some of the card games that we've created over at Tanuki Games, shameless plug. But
we're going to plug them all in a second. Yeah, we'll get to that. Also, actually, watch this. I'm going to go to the next slide here. Hey, Tanuki Games.
Hey!
What kinds of games does Tanuki Games make?
But like some of the big board games that are out there as well, like Pandemic and whatnot.
There's a board game called Pandemic.
There's a board game called Pandemic. Yeah, probably too soon to bring it to the table anymore. But people might get like a post-traumatic stress for seeing this kind of game.
Oh, sorry, this is a Tanuki game.
This is not a Tanuki game. No, okay. This is a Z-Man game, I believe it is. But it was hugely successful, and there's billions of variations on it. Anyone who's a board gamer might. Your listeners who are board gamers might have heard of this before.
Oh, I've never heard of it. I'm. Is that a bad sign? Is that a bad thing?
No. But it's also can be used very effectively because it requires sort of communication and cooperation and whatnot. And it has sort of like light role playing elements in a way.
Okay.
But from there, you can then kind of transition to sort of more deep storyteller, making character sheets and all this kind of stuff.
So then back to Tanuki Games, you said you've got Four Kingdoms, and that's a card game that has role-playing elements to it?
So Four Kingdoms is a map-making game. It's a sort of narrative map-making game.
Okay.
What players, students, teachers, whatever need to use is simply four pieces of white paper. They spread them out, and as they kind of go through using a standard deck of cards, they just draw cards that prompts them to a kind of a leading question that then kind of the story then develops out of these cards that they draw. And then the players sort of discuss what they're going to draw. And then they kind of, the world sort of grows out of these cards that they draw from it. And this is sort of the fundamental game loop
Do you have the Do you have the cards with you? Could like what would a sample card?
So yeah, Tanuki Games is just a booklet. It's sort of this is
the booklet. This is Four Kingdoms. Cool.
This is Four Kingdoms, and you basically it's like, oh, I don't know how to play games. I don't know what to know. You just start off from page one, and it explains how to set it up very quickly, and then you just begin playing, turning the page, and you read the prompts, and you keep going. And
so the main goal is to just draw maps.
Yes,
that sounds incredibly fun, even for like really young kids. So
oh yeah,
and so these maps they're not drawing realistic worlds. They're just drawing creative, like kind of imaginative worlds, like.
Yes.
And so
yes. And
when they draw cards, they get different, you know, you have a mountain on your land, or is that the type of card you'd be drawing?
Right. So in the beginning, the first few steps you have to do is sort of establish your kingdom. And now this game could be as serious and dramatic and kind of Game of Thrones, rich in political intrigue as you want, or it could be, you know, silly as, you know, the ice cream kingdom and the cat kingdom and the, you know, the happy frogs bureaucrat kingdom or whatever.
Okay.
So it begins with sort of establishing your kingdom and, you know, choosing what it is that they sort of make and, you know, where are the buildings, and people just start drawing this little map. And then from each card, then the kingdoms are sort of like thrust against each other based on what you draw. So like maybe I'm playing the kind of ninja cat kingdom, and so I draw a card and it says your kingdom has discovered something in the natural world, and so now I have to kind of think about what it is and then sort of draw it on the map. Okay, we've discovered that, you know, these trees grow magic bananas that when you eat you grow 10 times the size, and so I draw some magic bananas and whatnot.
Nice.
And then the next person draws one, and they say, you begin a trade route with the other one. And so, oh, well, I'm going to want some of those magic bananas too. And then they draw their characters, their bureaucratic frogs, 10 times bigger now. And then as you draw more and more cards, the sort of game progresses and sort of conflict arises. And, you know, it's up to the four players who are playing to either sort of resolve that or...
or go with it.
Yeah.
So this... Is this something you would play like in a, what would be the time span you're looking at playing this, you know, one round of the game, if you're using it in a class as a classroom game? Is it?
Well, the beauty of it is you can just play, say, four cards and then kind of leave that to the side there and then kind of pick it up.
Anytime.
The next time. And okay. It's sort of like, it becomes like this serial, like a television program that you go, oh, what happened last week? And then as a sort of post-task activity, you could have the students sort of kind of relay
right.
what happened within their world.
Summarize it, review it, explain it, you know, convey it. That's really, really cool. And so what about the level? You said you have some students, you know, who maybe they're not confident speaking, they can't read or write. At what level do you think this game is best suited?
Yeah, I do think this game is probably without a sort of high level of guidance from, say, like a teacher or like a GM, quote unquote, then it's probably best for the sort of higher levels from like high school and up.
Okay.
Though, I mean, I think junior high school students would be able to do it, but then it might descend into non-English use at this point. But the game was designed as sort of a game, but can also be used in the classroom effectively, I think.
Okay. But just even just, you know, talking about the elements, though, I think this is really valuable for a lot of teachers to think, hey, you know, we could just do this activity and just carry it on throughout, you know, every lesson for a full year. And that is a role-playing game in a sense. Because that's where, for me, the term role-playing game, I kind of get, you know, lost. I'm not sure. How to approach that, but this is really insightful. I think I've got some ideas even for like 5-year-olds. Like, let's just draw your favorite country, and you know, actually, we did do this activity last year. Every fourth lesson, we do a special activity or special lesson, a craft or you know, a quick cooking class. And one year, you know, one time we're like, let's get some pet bottles, some empty you know pet bottles, and let's have the kids draw their own treasure maps. And so we study words, you know, like ABC words, like words that start with C and D, like cat and car and dog and egg. And we told them, you have to put three items from our vocab words in your treasure chest. And you have to put the number of them. So they're like, okay, I'm going to put 400 eggs. and I'm going to put 200 cats, and so they're getting really into it. And then, you know, on the treasure map, they have to go to three locations to, yeah. you know, to find the, anyway, they got super into it. And I guess they were probably treating that as a role-playing game. And I was oblivious to the, you know, that fact. And I wasn't necessarily taking advantage of that, or, you know, maybe getting the most out of it. So.
Yeah, no, I think that's it. Like you've kind of hit it. It's getting that you've got a lot of the aspects that you're looking for. You've got this idea of kind of momentum and like inertia, and students are sort of playing a theme and whatnot. So yeah. I mean, I think that's all the things that people look for in the game. And maybe you like you said, you weren't thinking it was a role playing game, but I think they certainly were.
Right.
Especially right. when they finally got to that treasure and you got a reward. Maybe if they, if they get the one that they don't want, well, maybe they have a second chance even, and they could go kind of try to find another treasure, but they got to then go back to the drawing board and follow the clues again. And you've almost got like an escape room at this point. Yeah.
Okay. Very cool. So you guys have four kingdoms. So you have some other games that are not necessarily like RPG style, but what other games do you guys?
We currently have a game called Golden Week, which is, unfortunately, it's sold out at the moment, but we have a second edition coming out with this amazing art by this Spanish artist, Nicolas Castell, who's just incredible.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. And I mean, I should just put it all on him, because it's the stuff that he's been able to come up with is just amazing. But I wouldn't go so far as to say it's a role-playing game, but, you know, I mean, you are playing a role in a sense, but it doesn't have this sort of like emergent story. What happens is you are playing with a partner,
okay.
And you're looking to collect sort of events that have a designated kind of time and sort of money value in order to do that. Oh, I wanted to go see a movie. Well, I need, you know, 2 to 3 hours of my time and about 2,000 to 3,000 yen in order to do that. Mm-hmm. So I have to draw a card from another deck in order to sort of get that time and money and discuss with my partner who's sitting across from me to get those cards so that we can do that activity. And then if I could kind of do an amount of activities before the other teams can, then we've sort of planned our Golden Week holidays better and more quickly than other people have. And then when we're finished, you could say, oh, what are you doing this Golden Week? Oh, I'm going to a movie. I'm, you know, going to the park and so on and so forth. And so that way, I guess there's a little bit of like, our family has planned this trip and this is what we're doing.
It sounds very much role-playing.
It lacks the sort of the fantasy element, but again, that's the beauty of, I guess, role playing, is they can be set in a real world setting, science fiction setting, fantasy setting, whatever you want. Yep.
And you think your students tend to find that the fantasy genre is more exciting, or is there, it just anything goes?
Well, I you know, truth be told, I think it's the non fantasy settings that are the easiest to bring to the classroom because. Yeah, because then you're using a lot more of like the functional language that students...
Right, you don't need to talk about the scales and like demon slayers. And...
exactly, stuff like that. The fantasy element can, I think, be brought in into that same thing. Because they're still learning the skills. Like we were talking earlier about the shopkeeper and the client.
All right. Sweet. So let me jump to our next slide here. Is it possible, I guess, for anyone doing online, how obviously if you're just doing the verbal communication, you don't really need a card. So you can do role playing in online lessons. Would you agree with that?
Yes, you can. I agree with that. Yeah. I like to use things like the interactive whiteboard or whatnot, or in some ways you need something for the characters to sort of like to interact with. I do like that, or sort of some sort of visual element, but that's not entirely necessary for role-playing. But I mean, if any of your listeners do watch this and are kind of curious to try out a Tanuki game,
well,
they can feel free to contact me at any time or any of my three partners, and we'd be very happy to sit down with you and kind of work you through the process and do any of that as well. Yeah.
Very nice. So is it possible to try one of these games online now?
Well, let's see. I mean, do we have access to the whiteboard?
I don't know.
Yes. Okay. So if we were to begin, say, a game of four kingdoms, we begin sort of with the old world. Now, okay. This is generally a game for four players, but let's adapt it just for the two of us. Why not?
Yep.
And so the initial prompt comes out and says something like this. Since the ancient times, we all knew that in the center of the world lay the ancient something of something.
Okay.
And maybe if I was in the classroom, I might play some sort of like thematic music or something like that to get students into the mood, like a soundtrack for their story. And now together we would decide what is going to be in the center of this kingdom. And now this white expanse, which would be kind of four large A4 pieces of paper put together.
Right.
It has something in which the world has emerged from, and we can discuss together what we want it to be.
Can I draw that? Can I draw this into four pages? Is that what you?
if you'd like, sure.
So we'd have four pieces of paper, like this.
There we go.
All right. So each player has their own page, or do we all draw on these together?
Yes, well, we all get to draw on these together, but we also sort of have our own little corner of the map, which is our kingdom early on.
Okay.
And now for the beginning, we're just going to be focusing on the center part.
Yeah.
In which we just decide what it's going to be. And now the students would have some time to sort of to collect their thoughts and hopefully bring in stuff that they've been using in previous classes together. So what do we want in the beginning of our, in the center of our world here? Do we want it to be a giant tree or a smelly cat, or just think adjective noun phrase or something like this?
All right, so anything goes. And do kids kind of be silly when they do this, or do you find that they're more serious?
Totally depends on the group. Okay. Depends on the group. For my level, some students once they realize what we're doing, I teach groups that are really into. I mean, the major is that they're going to be anime designers in the future, so their art is just incredible.
Right.
But some students they get really into it, and they get really serious, and they want to make this sweeping saga. Other students be a bit more kind of silly.
Okay. What do you recommend for the center of our universe or center of our world here?
Well, I know what's coming, so I don't want to say anything. But
I see. Okay. Can I choose?
Yes.
I guess, let's see, can we have like just like some socks, like some stinky socks?
Some stinky socks, sure. Okay, why don't we make them colorful?
All right.
Stinky sock. And then we would draw the socks together, right?
All
so
right.
I'm going to draw some socks.
All right, so here are my socks. I've got a little... Yeah, no, we're on the same page with the socks?
We're on the same, yeah, of course they're striped socks, yeah. Change the color and put some stinkiness up in there. Yeah, there we go.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah, so in the ancient world, we all knew that in the center of the world lay the ancient stinky socks.
Okay.
Okay. we then move on to, there are a few other stages here. And that could be, the warm-up.
Okay.
Right. If you're teaching, say how to use adjectives this lesson, right?
Right.
We've just learned how to say stinky and socks or something like this, right?
Sure.
And that could be a lesson. Move on. Next week, you bring back your stories. The center of the kingdom lie what? The stinky socks. The giant tree, the hairy cat, whatever it is. And now we would go on to making our kingdoms.
Okay.
And so in your corner of the kingdom, let's begin. Let's say again, I know what's coming. You. In each of the corners is a kingdom, and it's the same thing. You are the kingdom of what? And now you can fill it in with what? Think of it like a Mad Lib, in a sense.
Okay, so, and let's see. So is this my corner down here? Is this right?
Wherever you like, yes.
Okay. So this is my kingdom, and I have to draw something in my kingdom.
And tell us what your kingdom is. Your kingdom is the kingdom of, bureaucratic Cthulhu monsters. It is the kingdom of,
So the people that reside, people that live in my kingdom.
Yes.
All right. I'm going to tie battle eggs into this. So this is going to be I'm going to go with the rainbow ninjas. It's one of our characters. We got the rainbow ninjas. And I have to draw that, don't I?
Yes.
Uh-oh. All right. So, I'm still in diamond mode here. Can I undo that? Yeah. So,
and of course, other students can jump in here and kind of help you out with your drawings if you'd like.
Okay.
I think at this point, I like to keep keep them autonomous and keep the students kind of separate on their own pages after they work on the communal center. Now they can go off and they get this moment of creating their own thing, but that will soon change.
Got it. So, all right, let's just assume this is a Rainbow Ninja.
Yeah, great. Yes, and then my kingdom will be the elephant butterflies, I guess. Their ears are the wings. Then they have a little elephant tail or something like this.
Got it.
And they live in the cloud empire with a beehive on the top.
All right.
Or something like that. Where do your rainbow ninjas live?
They live on a two-dimensional plane. They live on the Cartesian coordinates of X and Y. And they are also two-dimensional.
Yeah. That extends off in directions infinitely. I don't. Yeah, exactly. And again, this could be following a lesson on sort of like nature and objects and things like that.
Okay. Math lesson.
Sure, sure. I mean, that will sort of direct the type of things that are going to come out of that lesson. But you also want to encourage them to sort of now, you know, using this material to come up with their own thing.
Okay.
All right. So next thing you know, you would then every student would do this, and now you've got the kingdoms that are now going to kind of smash up against each other. So I'll just draw the first card here. Okay. With this game, all you do need is a standard deck of cards.
Oh, I see.
And I then just refer then to the game booklet to see what it is.
When you say role playing game, I always think of like dice or something. So this is where that element comes into play.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Now you can add all this sort of thematic chrome on top of it as you want. People who are like familiar with role playing games might want to add some sort of like conflict resolution system. Mm-hmm. In this case, the conflict should be resolved sort of communicatively between the two of us.
Right.
But if you wanted to add like, oh, we don't know who should have done what, and okay, you could add a coin flip or a dice roll or whatever type of conflict resolution that you would want.
Got it.
So in this case, let's say I drew a five of spades. I would then kind of look at the saga deck, mm-hmm. as it's called in the booklet, and then look at the spades deck, which is the science and the unknown.
Okay.
And read yours. And the five of spades says a mysterious figure appears with a message.
All right. And so this is something that the students will then go in and draw.
And then, well, so this would be you drew the card. So yeah. You are sort of in narrative control here. You're able to sort of come up with whatever that message is, whatever that figure was, and draw it on the Mac. But also you can freely communicate with your other players to think, oh, if you don't have an idea, what do you think it should be?
Okay. Got it.
So why don't we figure that one out? So you've got a mysterious figure appears with a message.
Okay. So we have to decide the figure and the message?
Yes.
Okay. It's probably Santa Claus. And he has his wish list for his birthday.
And maybe he appears from the land of stinky socks for some strange reason that we're not sure of.
Yeah, he never changes his socks, I assume, so.
He's got one pair, the red with like the white frilly things around them. You
yep.
know? Those are his work and casual socks. In fact, they're right here, I think. So then we'd also draw that. So we'd draw Santa.
Yep.
Maybe give him a little message in his hand.
Okay.
Then I'll start it off. Blah, 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 yeah. And so on and so forth, right?
So then we all the students jump in and they draw that.
Yep. And then the next player on the table will draw the next card and we're going to see what's going to happen. Now I've drawn the clubs, mm-hmm. Which is very unfortunate for me because the clubs deck represents struggle and conflict.
All right.
And the one that I've just drawn is something terrible has happened in the center. And so let's see what could have happened in the center. So Santa has just come out of the center.
Okay.
And he's nice and stinky.
Yeah.
And the terrible catastrophe is that one of the rivers one of the rivers here has washed all of the socks, thus sort of cleaning them.
You're right.
Of their
I was thinking mom.
Think.
I was thinking mom was going to come by with some laundry detergent, but that's pretty much the same result.
Well, that's where they're coming from. Yeah, this giant river is a flowing river of laundry detergent coming from mom, the ancient deity from beyond the kingdoms.
Got it. So this seems really fun. Like you said, it's got the intrinsic, like, just kids will not be thinking of it as a textbook activity, not as a, you know, let's just do this for 3 minutes to practice the vocab, but they have kind of just free reign over anything.
Yes.
And then the element of having to communicate with the other people in the group, and then at the end of the day, summarizing that. And then if you do this every...
They've produced something now, yeah.
Right. And so then every lesson, if you did this as a repetitive activity, I think initially it seems like it would be hard to kind of describe or explain, but just through repetition, that's something they could pick up. So,
well, yeah, and I think there's very little explanation necessary in a way. Once you sort of get them into it, they just kind of start to pick it up naturally. And that's sort of what the almost pedagogical idea at the beginning there with drawing that group centerpiece is you get them to be like, oh, okay, we could draw on other people's pages. Now we're just like, we're thinking about something, and then we're drawing it. And then it just leads to more complex actions later on. And they get really, really creative. By just using a random draw of cards, you may get things that are beyond the scope of what you're trying to achieve in that same lesson. If you were to play it as a role-playing game, well, that's really exciting. That's sort of what you want. But what you may want to do then is sort of just direct it and call the deck with the sort of events that you want to sort of
focus on. Or each lesson just have a list of four things that they can, you know, draw a straw or, you know, choose one of the random targets or whatever you're aiming for. But it's just kind of unlimited, you know, potential.
Yes.
And so, just, yeah, how to get into it, I think. I've never, you know, thought of this sort of approach to lessons. If you're teaching a class, if you're teaching a course and you have the students 4 times a week, you said for 90 minutes?
Yes, like 90 minutes each class.
Right, yeah. Right. So that's what percentage of your lessons would you dedicate to these kinds of activities?
This usually comes at the end of sort of like a unit, so to speak. We'll get through several units, and then we'll get around to sort of like a, this is almost like a reward that's then presented to them, and they know to stay on task and whatnot, and to stay within the English mode and whatnot. But that requires a lot of sort of hovering around and doing that. And then, you know, once I know that they're sort of like they're up and running, well, then, you know, it's you know, as if they want to do it several days back to back, if they're ahead, if we're ahead on what we're sort of meant to do by sort of, you know, the curriculum that's there.
Right.
You know, I'll try to implement it when I can, but,
yeah.
Anyway, I encourage teachers to sort of look at the sort of the fundamental kind of core mechanic here, which is relatively simple, mm-hmm. and look at how you can change the suits into things that match your needs. So in this, as this was designed as a standalone game, not necessarily only a sort of classroom related game, I made the suits, the arts for the spades, the conflict for the clubs, sort of romance for the hearts, and like law, riches, and power for the diamonds. But I could see it being very different. The black cards could be for sort of evening activities. The red cards could be for daytime activities.
Sure. So
bringing it down to just two categories, or, you know, make the black cards adjectives and the red cards nouns and things like that.
And seasons then, and weather. And sure.
Yeah.
No, this is cool because, like you said a lot of teachers are probably intimidated by the word role-playing games. And for me as well, like, just kind of, I have no idea what they are, how to approach them, but this is definitely concrete and something that I even if I can't use the, you know, the advanced levels of is Four Kingdoms, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, still just the concepts. And then if we grow into that level, then I know that that's something that I can take advantage of as well.
Well, can I maybe show you something real quick that I've done with another group? Do we have time?
Please. We have plenty of time.
Okay. So let's see here. I'm going to have to share screen here and then play this. So, okay. So this is another sort of activity that I've done that hasn't been made as a Tanuki game yet, but that I've just used in classes for role play elements.
So you said this is not a Tanuki game yet, but it will be?
Potentially. We'll see.
Okay.
We'll see what happens. the decisions are not mine alone.
Sure.
So the thematic element of this game is the students slash players begin on a sort of deserted island, you know, think Castaway or Robinson Crusoe or whatnot.
Right.
And they start off on this shipwrecked beach. You can use sort of tokens, dice if you want. All these things are really nice if you wanted to use them. But I'll just have the students like use their erasers or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could even use a deck of cards that have like 1 to 6 on them. And the 1 to 6 indicate the things that like the student can kind of get from that card if they wanted to sort of like kind of look for fish or something like that.
Okay.
So they would roll a dice, and if they, you know, they got a 1, 2, or 3, they wouldn't get anything. If they got a 4, 5, 6, no, they got a fish. Now they write that on their kind of character sheet. And I don't want to go into the back prep for it, but the idea is to sort of somehow escape the island. One of the other things that you could do instead is to like move your eraser, in this case indicated by the red token, mm-hmm. like off to either the side, to go to the north, go to the west, go to the south, go to the east. And so they can sort of move off and thus go to like another place. And then they would draw like a random card, and it would be, say, mountains. And now this has other things that they could do. Or, you know, over here, they go to fields and other things they could do, and so on and so forth. Maybe they find objects such as a torch, this one indicated by a blue card, which then they could pick up and put it into their inventory. And you're kind of playing a kind of Minecraft almost. You're kind of exploring this world.
Yeah, I feel like when you have a card or a physical object, I think that will make it much more approachable for students as well as teachers who might not, you know, have any experience with the role playing games kind of domain. So that seems really good.
Well, this goes into that sort of like tactical element as well, because they could see the world kind of unfold. I've done Theater of the Mind role playing, which is just basically where we try to imagine the space in between us. I find that also to be very effective. But I'll start off with sort of maybe drawing a little map on the whiteboard, say, and like you're in Camp A, which is on the left side of the whiteboard, and you're in Camp B, which is the right side of the whiteboard. And maybe there's a river, maybe there's a sort of like a road, and they indicate just by squiggly lines that go down the board. And then they have to get to the center somehow. And it's just, at first they don't know what they have to do, but they realize that they'll have to sort of move somehow, and, you know, they'll have to elicit speech for kind of getting to a place. I want to go over there. I want to go over the river. And the idea of this sort of river and a road going down is that they're forced to sort of get into some sort of conflict, in this case, crossing the river or crossing the road somehow,
right,
before then we lead on to more complex stuff within the center of the whiteboard, where they emerge different buildings and roads and forests or whatever.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, you keep mentioning conflict, and I realize that with my, you know, 3, 4, and 5 year olds, that's kind of how I set up my classroom. And so to enter the classroom, they can't come in unless they, you know, say the magic word or the password or whatever. It's, can I come in, please? But they're not allowed to have pencils in the classroom. And so mm-hmm. I give them the worksheet. And so there's, again, you call it conflict. I call it a challenge, or, you know, communicative challenge or whatever. But this is interesting. I think we have the same elements in play. It's just how they're presented. And obviously, with a college student comes in, like, why can't I have my own pencil? it doesn't really work with that age group. So this seems like a much more, I don't know, just a cool way to approach it.
Yeah, no, that's brilliant. Yeah, I guess I'm using the word conflict now coming off of Four Kingdoms. But yeah, I don't want to indicate that it should always be like a battle or something like that. I find that by itself that sort of works well, but like there are so many more interesting role play games out there that are while they still have some conflict or struggle in them, and that there's something to kind of get over. In
right.
In this case, it's getting into the room, or, you know, being able to take out my pencil case, or getting across the river, or trying to.
But that's how, and that's the important part about games that I think is when you throw a sticky ball at a whiteboard and try and hit some points and try to win, you're not thinking about how to communicate in English. Whereas these conflicts or challenges or whatever you want to call it, by having that incorporated, you build a really nice environment for students to just naturally use English.
Yes, playing the Golden Week game that we made, I had a wonderful moment where the goal is for students to kind of gather sort of time and money in order to sort of like kind of race to complete their schedules before another group does. And this one boy in the class just kept drawing for cars, and he's looking for the last 1 hour of time to be able to do this and win the game. Sort of thing. And he kept drawing cars, and he wouldn't get any. He just get money. He kept money. And he just cries out. He's like, "I have no time."
That's great.
And it just came out so naturally, and everybody cracked up. And I was like, "Yeah, get used to it. It doesn't get any easier."
Super cool. Yeah. Well, thank you. Yeah, that's great. Thank you so much for that demonstration. So, I think we're gonna go on to our next slide here, which is, if you mentioned this already, but if we want to try your games, we should just contact you directly. Is that the?
Contacting directly or going to tanukigames.org. There's website links and we have some games on there. There's a lot of free to print stuff that's already there, especially a game called So Says Japan, which isn't necessarily connected to role playing elements, but it's sort of a real popular kind of quiz style, like survey game.
Okay.
That's there.
And so those, you can just download it, print it, and then play it. It's print and play, right? And those are free to try out?
We update it with seasonal kind of updates about like thematic, like about this cherry blossom viewing or whatnot, or about Christmas and what have you.
Wow.
It's about guessing percentiles kind of game, like Wits and Wagers or something like that.
Okay.
But that's totally print and playable. We also offer kind of decks of cards that are based on themes if people were really interested and wanted to get deeper into it if they wanted to.
Awesome. Cool. So you said that was tanukigames.org, right?
Yes.
The link is in the website for these webinars. So if anybody wants to check that out, definitely reach out. If you have any questions, comments, or if you want to try these games, you can print them and play them for free.
And I encourage people to really reach out if people are interested in this. We've had a really interesting conversation here, but I think I may have a tendency to kind of jump around a bit because I'm speaking to somebody like-minded and an English teacher. I get a bit sort of overexcited here. I think we may have lost some people along the way.
It's been really enlightening for me. I mean, just, you know, I have this approach that I've been using, and there's so many elements that I haven't even considered in my own lessons. And, you know, we're just going forward. I think, you know, we're going to try to implement more of these ideas, test them out and see how they work. Obviously for my style of class, I only meet with them once a week. So I don't know if I can somehow get them to go home and say, okay, well, you know, you need to draw your kingdom and bring it back for next week. And then we're going to build on this. So it could be this kind of in the classroom, out of the classroom.
You
know, that wouldn't even be called blended. It's just, you know, analog, but still, I think it's, the less digital, the less screen time I can give the younger kids, the better. But
well, then what are you doing in while they're drawing stinky socks on it? You're saying, I'm doing English, English homework.
Yeah, just anything that motivates, man. So that's awesome.
But I think a lot of what you already said is basically breaching on that idea. It's like the conflict or challenges, whatever you want to call them. It's just sort of skinning some sort of thematic through line over top of it, and this sense of kind of progression. Not only did you get into the classroom, but you got one step closer to the treasure chest or whatnot, right?
Right.
Got one step closer to escaping the island, one step closer to developing the great civilization that you always would have wanted. And I think kind of it's almost there's a bit of magic and trickery in there, isn't there?
No, it's good. It's really good because, like you said, the kids are they're captivated, they're motivated, they want to do it. Then in the process, they're going to pick up vocabulary, they're going to be communicating. And at the end of the day, you can say, hey, what did you do? Let's talk about it. Please, you know, explain. And they want to talk about it because they made it. Whereas if I show them a picture in a textbook, like, hey, this van has a vest. And they're like, what? I don't care. And so I think there's so many things here that we're touching on that it's definitely worth trying in some form or another. And I don't think that it's going to be, you know, restricted just to the older, more advanced students. I'm pretty sure that we can find a way to do this. And even if it's not like, you know, as, you know, role playing as you would, you know, Dungeons and Dragons, but, you know, like what I'm saying is turn your classroom into this experience that they come in and they have to do things. And so I think there's a lot of ways to try this. So there's a lot of awesome ideas.
Yeah, and it can happen so quickly and so seamlessly as well. Just as I know we're running out of time, one quick last thing. So, I mean, one time I just had a bunch of students, I had them just write down a bunch of lists. What are the things that are in your bag right now? Okay, figure them out in English and kind of write them down on your notebook. And they would do that. Now think of a few things that you have at home, write them down in your notebook. And they'd say, okay, and they would write them down and get together with some groups, randomize them. Okay, now all look at the things that you have that maybe are different from each other. Put those things together. Choose five or six of those things that you think are the most important. Okay, now you are in the zombie apocalypse, and those are the only things that you have with you. How do you survive? And they all go like, "Wait, what?" And then they have to be creative with all these objects, and just like you could see them just instantly start plotting and planning, and you know. But only one of your groups is going to make it through the end. You know.
Okay. Nice. So, a lot of shoe throwing and.
That's right. Yeah.
Hopefully not kill the zombies. Throwing.
Yeah. Right. Anyway, so you can easily throw some sort of thematic element on what can generally be seen as a stale exercise and make it just really pop, I think. Yeah.
Well, nice. Yeah, this is awesome. I've got a lot of great ideas. I hope the people watching and listening have got a lot out of this as well. If you want to contact,
yeah, I hope so.
If you want to, try out Tanuki Games, highly recommend it. And so how to get in touch, we've just established tanukigames.org, and people can reach out to you there. So today we're not going to do a questions or comment section on Zoom because we are pre-recording today's. So I want to say thanks to Jay. It's been really fun, and hopefully we can play more games in the near future in person. If you're in Japan and you ever have a chance to go to their booth at you guys go to JALT, ETJ. You're also
yes.
Are there any others that people can track you down and find you at?
We've also recently been at the Tokyo Game Mart and the Osaka Game Mart as well. However, that's just got canceled because of COVID.
Right.
Our new
yeah,
world.
Everything is so up in the air right now. Well, hopefully things calm down and we can get back to face-to-face and to hear more from Jay.
Yeah, and thank you so much, Jeremy, for having me. This has been so fun. I hope it's effective for your listeners, and hopefully I've been able to provide some insights or maybe just a few ideas that they can say, oh, I never... Like you said, they never thought of it that way.
I've got a ton, so I'm pretty sure it's great, man.
Thank you so much.
All right, well, thanks a lot, Jay. Have a good one.
You too.
Okay, take care,
guys.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.